For the first time in 22 years, the U.S. Federal Reserve is raising interest rates by half a percentage point. That's what we're breaking down first today. I'm Carl Azus. Interest is what banks get paid for loaning people money. If the Federal Reserve, America's central bank, raises interest rates, it means people have to pay back a higher percentage of the money they borrow. Why would the Fed want to do that? Inflation. The cost of living in America has gone up significantly over the past year as prices on the things we buy have risen. The thinking goes that if interest rates are higher and it's more expensive for people and businesses to borrow money, they'll spend less of it and inflation will settle back down. It's not an exact science. If the Fed raises interest rates too much too quickly, it can be like slamming the brakes on economic growth, and that could contribute to a recession. So the central bank is trying to find a balance between managing decades-high inflation but without hampering economic growth. That's what's behind its decision on Wednesday to raise interest rates. Half a percentage point doesn't sound like much, but the Fed usually makes smaller adjustments, like the quarter point rate hike it issued in March. The last time the Fed raised the rate by half a point was in 2000, and it says more raises like this are possible in the months ahead. The Fed says the U.S. labor market, the jobs picture, is strong, but consumer prices have risen at their highest rate in almost four decades, and the Fed doesn't think inflation's likely to go away on its own anytime soon. It says COVID-related lockdowns in China are contributing to ongoing problems with the supply chain. It says the war in Ukraine is contributing to elevated food and energy prices, and those had risen last year before Russia invaded. With all these economic pressures in place, the Fed is hoping its interest rate increases will slow down price increases. New data on inflation itself is also expected soon. Up next, U.S. President Joe Biden has asked Congress to approve $33 billion in additional assistance to Ukraine. In March, Congress had approved more than $13 billion in military and aid funding. President Biden says the cost isn't cheap, but that the bill is needed to support Ukraine in its fight against Russia, which invaded the nation on February 24th. U.S. Senator Rand Paul has suggested that America should sell Ukraine weapons, but not give them to the country if doing so increases U.S. national debt. There are also concerns about America's own stockpiles of certain weapons running low.
The stunning success the much smaller Ukrainian military has had against the Russian invaders would not be possible without the billions of dollars worth of U.S. and NATO weapons flooding into Ukraine. Notably, the thousands of easy-to-use, highly portable American javelins and Stingers that for more than 2 months have taken out countless Russian tanks and aircraft.
Sometimes we will speak softly and carry a large javelin because we're sending a lot of those in as well.
So many, in fact, that now the U.S. inventory of Stingers and javelins is running dangerously low.
The closet is bare. Just to give you one example, the United States military has probably dispensed about one-third of its javelin anti-tank missiles to Ukraine.
While the U.S. wants to give Ukraine what it needs, Pentagon war planners must balance that with not letting supplies dip below what the U.S. needs.
I think we're at that moment now with javelins and Stingers. The recent aid packages have not included any more of these missiles. To me, that indicates that the war planners have raised a flag here and the civilian leadership doesn't want to exhaust these inventories further.
The Biden administration has just requested almost $5.5 billion from Congress to replenish its stocks. But the Pentagon insists the aid packages for Ukraine have not hurt overall U.S. readiness.
We will never go below our minimum requirement for our stockpile, so we will always maintain the capability to defend this country and support our interests.
1,400 Stingers, about a quarter of the inventory, experts and lawmakers say, has been committed to Ukraine. The Stingers manufacturer, Raytheon, which also makes the javelin, says it no longer has some of the electronics parts, so the Stinger needs to be redesigned.
We have a very limited stock of material for Stinger production. We've been working with the DOD for the last couple of weeks. We're actively trying to resource some of the material.
The new phase of fighting in the flat and open eastern Donbas is changing the fight.
Fire!
The U.S. has just committed almost 100 howitzer systems and tens of thousands of artillery shells. But it's the Stingers and Javelins that have had the greatest impact. And now, according to manufacturers, getting back to pre-Ukraine inventory levels is going to take years.
10-second trivia. Which of these options occupies the greatest surface area? Ross Sea Ice Shelf, Germany, Lake Michigan, or Great Victoria Desert? With an estimated area of 182,000 square miles, the Ross Sea Ice Shelf in Antarctica is the largest of these options. Scuba diving with leopard seals and a really good dry suit. Ski mountaineering, where you actually hike up the mountain you ski down. Kayaking between icebergs and whales and caving through frozen caverns. All of these activities are possible for those with the means and the motivation to explore the frozen continent. You don't necessarily need a ship to get there, but if you take a seat on the plane you're about to see, you'll need more than $14,000 for a one-day trip and more than $62,000 for a five-day stay.
I can't say I've ever flown anywhere that would be as challenging as Antarctica. I've seen penguins on two occasions at our runway. I work for White Desert and I'm the Antarctic Operations Manager in Antarctica. Everything has to come with you. There's no shop that you can pop down to. Without the runway, we can't do anything. All of our cargo comes in through that, all of our people. It's certainly nothing like your standard airport. Every season we build it, and it's an ongoing thing that we maintain. All the ice in Antarctica is slowly moving towards the ocean. So it's about 18 meters every year. So every year we come back and realign. One of our biggest issues is the heat. When the runway gets to above a certain temperature, we can't land planes any longer because it's just unstable and obviously it gets very slippery. For every single flight, we do friction testing. Then every season, we'll do ground penetrating radar. Make sure that there's no crevasses or anything under the runway.
Fine. We have just landed on runway 175.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Spending time in Antarctica is a huge adventure. Every time I get off that plane, I still get that same feeling of just awe. It's the most amazing place to live for a little while.
When I saw this next story was theater raised, I thought my producer meant raised with a Z, like it was being destroyed. I was wrong. He meant it was being raised, as in lifted up, and for something that weighs 14 million pounds, hashtag engineering. This was part of a $2.5 billion renovation. Using 34 hydraulic lifting posts, workers lifted New York's Palace Theater about a quarter inch per hour. After 4 months of that, the landmark, which dates back to 1913, will now sit on the third floor of its building, while new retail and entertainment space will be installed below it. Going any higher might bother the fiddler on the roof. The producers of that company might have thought, Mamma mia, we could have been doubt-fired if we didn't get all our cats in a row. They might have gotten Spam-a-lot from a music man who thought they were out of chorus line, but thankfully, the show will go on. I'm Carl Azus. Today's shout-out takes us to Mount Tabor High School, located in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Thank you for subscribing and leaving a comment at youtube.com/CNN.